Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Wednesday, October 19th, 2022. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, we'll hear my interview with the host of NPR's Alt Latino. Bartlett Regional Hospital will share the details of the first Real Talk Run Walk to raise awareness of motherhood, mental health, birth trauma, pregnancy, and infant loss. The Juno Symphony gives us a preview of their weekend concert performances, and Kindred Post will be here to tell us about the return of trick-or-treating at downtown businesses. Those conversations, sounds wild, savory moment, music, and more coming up right here on Juno Afternoon. Weather, si hudak wusitan, it's raining. Weather for tonight, showers with lows around 46 and breezy. Tomorrow, rain, high near 48 degrees. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Ak-Kwan. The Xinedi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. The tidelands where our studios sit are now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. But they were once a source of food, a place to maintain smokehouses, and a place to gather driftwood for fuel. In sharing this history, KTOO hopes to honor the ancestors and the descendants of the Ak-Kwan. We recognize those families who have never relinquished their ownership and stewardship of their land and waterways, and continue to cherish and depend upon their immediate connection to the waterfront for today and for future generations. We'd also like to take a moment to say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gunas Chish to Vera Starboard, who planted the idea of making it super place specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Petershore, who created so much of the beautiful structure. Ishmael Hope, who gave additional ideas. And Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Earlier this month, I had the opportunity to sit down with the hosts of the NPR show Alt Latino. It's a half-hour program featuring music and conversation with a focus on contemporary Latinx culture, and it airs Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. on our music station KRNN Juno 102.7 and 103.1. Alt Latino recently took a break from producing new episodes to reflect and do some research, and now they have returned with fresh content. Here's my interview with host Felix Contreras and Ana Maria Sayer. Would you please introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Ana Maria Sayer, co-host of Alt Latino.
And I'm Felix Contreras, co-host of Alt Latino.
How did you both get into broadcasting?
You go first.
Me first? Okay. Well, my story is significantly shorter than Felix's, so that works. I started as an intern with NPR and started specifically on Alt Latino, and that was my start, and stayed on the show. They could never get rid of me, and here I am.
What did you like about Alt Latino?
Oh, man. I think really just the ways that I think for me as a listener, well before I even started working with the show, was the ways that Felix was able to kind of have these moments with artists where he was able to really distill ideas or facts or stories about Latino culture more broadly that I really connected with and that made me feel as though everything that I grew up with, you know, growing up in Southern California in a Mexican-American household, that was, like, such a tiny piece of, like, this actually much larger community and family that I was a part of. And so That was a really beautiful thing about the show for me, and to do that through music, which is both, I think, a backbone for Latino life and also something that is personally very meaningful to me, was just really exciting and truly a gift.
Felix, how about yourself? How did you get into broadcasting and public radio?
It was, let's see, October 17th will be 45 years for me. I still have the memo from my first job. That's how I know the date. Yeah, it was working for a television station in Fresno, California. I was going to school. I was very lucky. I got a job while I was still in school. So I learned journalism through the class, but also through the television station. It was an NBC affiliate. And then eventually, in 1980, one of my college professors started a bilingual listener-supported radio station in Fresno. It was non-affiliated with NPR or any of the other networks, and it was, like I said, a bilingual listener-supported radio station, and I was a volunteer there, and I learned how to do programming, run a show, do all that stuff. We pioneered Latin jazz programming in Central California, started doing documentary stuff like that. So that was my connection to public radio. And then there's a long, long, long story, but I came here.
I told you mine was a lot shorter.
And I came to NPR in 2001. Yeah, 2001.
Did your love of music come from your some of the things you were doing in your career, or was it the other way around? Did the love of music drive your career?
I was never able to mix the love of music with my career until I came to NPR, because I was working in television. I was working in news and television. I worked for NBC in Miami for a while. So it was all hard news stuff, and the music was always just on the side. It was just a passion. Either playing music or listening to music, going to shows, stuff like that. So this show, or coming to NPR to work on the jazz programming initially, and then the cultural desk, and then within the news department, and then on the show itself, Latino, 12 years ago, has been my opportunity to mix my avocation with my passion.
And how about you? Where did your love of music come from, Ana Maria?
You know, I think, like I kind of briefly touched on earlier, it really is, I think, something that it's like just a part of being a Latina in many ways is how I felt. I say that, you know, I learned about my family and my culture and myself through, you know, hearing my abuela sing boleros and rancheras when I was little, and that being such a feeling, I think, of home and of comfort. And so I think that because of that, you know, there was just a very natural progression of finding it for myself too, independently, and you know, developing a love of music that no one in my family had ever heard of as well, and kind of meshing all of those things together as I got older and realizing just how much of who I am can be really heard and felt with all kinds of music, which is really exciting.
Well, we love Alt Latino. We've been carrying it here at the station for a few years. I wanted to ask you both, what is important about Alt Latino and maybe other shows like it?
Well, you know, the fact that it's carried in Alaska, and there are a handful of stations that carry it in Alaska, that's always in the back of my mind, because it allows me to think about how we present ideas, cultures, interviews, etc. How we present it so that we want to create an invitation for everyone to come in, whether there are Latino people listening up in Alaska, people who are not Latino listening in Alaska. You know, it's just like we wanted to be able to, or any place in the country really, to be able to present something that's an invitation into this different world, our world, the various worlds that we live in. So that's when I think about when we're on different stations around the country, that's always in the back of my mind in terms of how we present things and what we present.
Ana Maria, would you add
to your question?
Yes. I wanted to give your co-host a chance to respond as well.
I mean, I would echo a lot of what Felix said, and just that, I don't know. Maybe it's just me saying this a little biased, but I think that the work that we do is just, it's really unique, I think, for there's not a lot of shows, I think, doing what we're doing, and that I think a lot of who we are and what we are and what we represent is really trying to be this unifying voice and be this show that not only is fun and entertaining and interesting to listen to, but also like has this a little bit of a higher calling of really inviting people to feel like they're in community with each other. And I think that we have a really unique opportunity to be able to build that community, right? Like there is this natural starting point of us all having some kind of shared experience. And I think that that's something that, you know, hearing from people now that the show is actually live again, living out in the world of people telling me like, wow, this moment really resonated with me or taught me something already, you know, so soon, we're only 4 episodes in, taught me something about who I am or made me think about this, about my family. I think that that's, you know, that's such a wonderful and also advantageous starting point for us, right? Like to be able to build off of that is just really exciting. And I just, wow, I feel so lucky to be in this work.
And you're back. The show is back, Alt Latino, after a little break where you sort of took some time to reset. You sent out surveys. I filled it out. And now, so you're back doing live shows again. What's changed? What's new?
Well, you get to hear Felix and I argue on the air, which is exciting.
Discuss.
Sorry, yes.
What we've done, you know, over the years that I've been doing Alt Latino, we've tried different formats, different things. And we've, as we thought about retooling and re-energizing the show for the next 12 years, I think that we settled on the concept of having more conversations, because when we got down to it, that's pretty much been the backbone for a lot of the successes that we've had in the past, is just having conversations about life, about music, about culture, about identity, about so many different things. So that is, if there's a noticeable change, it's the emphasis on conversation. And we're hearing that that the conversations that Anna and I have after the conversations with the artist, where we discuss that, that's becoming something that people listen for as well. Because that's where we carry on what we do offline anyway, is talk mm-hmm. about the artist, talk about music, and talk about the things that they were talking about or what they were saying.
Yeah. Did you consider doing anything a little bit more dramatic, like changing the name of the show to Alt Latinx, which is a term that, you know, you hear more and more these days, or perhaps conversing all in Spanish?
All of the above.
We considered a lot of different things. Yeah, I think that was for sure something that was on the mind, and I think every choice that we made was both made totally like we have no idea and also very intentional. So you know, I think we spent a lot of time talking about every single thing that we did do or didn't do differently, and you know, all to say we don't know ultimately what will resonate most with the people that we're trying to reach, and that's something that we're really excited to learn more about. But in terms of, you know, changing the name or like you said, you know, doing conversations all in Spanish, I think, you know, we really thought about who our audience was, and decided that at this point this was something that, you know, there's a huge Latinx, Latino audience out there who is bilingual, who is English and Spanish speaking, who would benefit from still English content. And so it's definitely something in our minds that maybe one day we'll be all in Spanish. But for now, this is who we're trying to speak to at the moment.
Well, I've always thought the show struck a great balance. I appreciate that it's in English. It makes it accessible for me and probably the majority of our listeners, too. So I just want to thank you both for talking to me today. I'm a big fan of yours, a big fan of the show, and I'm really looking forward to what's to come.
Yeah.
Thank you so
you
much.
Too.
Thank you. This was so fun, really.
Yeah.
Alaska's really never far from my mind, seriously, because we're on stations up there.
Oh my God, that's a dream. I would love to.
Station visit, yep.
Oh my gosh, we would love that. In person next time for sure.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Shelly.
You can hear Alt Latino every Thursday on KRNN 102.7 and 103.1. Coming up later in the show, we'll hear about the Real Talk Walk Run to raise awareness of the effects of pregnancy, childbirth, and motherhood on mental health. Coming up next, here's this week's episode of Savory Moment, Grilled Black Cod Tips.
Step in to the savory moment. Alaska's southeast coast, where waters are deep and cold, is home to some of the world's richest seafood. And nothing says rich like black cod tips. Black cod tips are sometimes referred to as the bacon of the sea. Roughly the size and shape of a small fingerling potato, these plump, oil-rich strips are harvested from the collar of the fish and often cooked on the grill, where dark, crispy edges arise from the marriage of fat and fire. But first, a great marinade. Alaska black cod fisherman Linda Benkin recommends equal parts orange juice and soy sauce, flavored with lemon, sesame oil, ketchup, maple syrup, and fresh ginger. Marinate under refrigeration for at least 2 hours. Let your grill get nice and hot before laying the tips out on well-oiled grates. Black cod tips take about 5 minutes per side to cook. Allow some nice charring to develop, then gently nudge them off the grates with a spatula. Transfer to a platter and garnish with thinly sliced scallions. What to serve alongside your black cod tips? How about a bowl of fragrant jasmine rice and a salad of diced cantaloupe and cucumber tossed with seasoned rice wine vinegar and minced chives? If black cod tips aren't available, try this marinade with salmon or halibut. You can find the full recipe for grilled black cod tips at savorymoment.org. I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Hansen grass, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na kaya ha ani kak, gunish cheesh.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. The journey to parenthood is nothing short of challenging. Bartlett Regional Hospital and Anchor Counseling and Consulting are teaming up for the first annual Real Talk Run Walk this Saturday, and here with me to tell me more is Sarah Gress. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here today. Would you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do at Bartlett?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a nurse and a lactation consultant, and my role at Bartlett is as a perinatal educator, supporting families in pregnancy. I get to work with families doing a lot of prenatal education. I get to, with a team of other lactation consultants, support people in their inpatient stay and in their outpatient time with lactation. And we run a host of other play groups and parent support groups, basically from birth through about preschool age. So I get to, one of my favorite parts, Shelley, is that I get to know families while they're expecting and building their family, and then for sometimes years afterwards. So it's pretty special.
And you're here today to talk about the very first Real Talk Run Walk. I wanted to ask, how did this idea come about?
Yeah, so all of the groups and classes that I just talked about have been in existence for a number of years, but about 3 years ago, Terry Forst, who is a licensed professional therapist who owns the Anchor Counseling that you mentioned previously, we got talking about the needs that she was seeing in her private practice, and honestly, just some of the unmet needs that we were seeing in our perinatal population surrounding perinatal mental health and some of the challenges that come up there. And a couple of support groups were born out of that need. So in February of 2021, we started offering a monthly group called our Real Talk Support Group for Mothers. And that is, as the name kind of indicates, it is dedicated to having some real honest conversation about some of the parts of motherhood that are more challenging and not always discussed in some of the other spaces that are available for mothers and new parents. And then we also have a pregnancy and infant loss support group that meets once a month as well. So those two got started in February of 2021. And then just this past year, we launched a new series that's aimed at, it's a processing group for folks who have experienced what they would define as a traumatic birth experience, which really the numbers around that are kind of astounding. It's about 1 in 3 people would define their birth experiences as traumatic. So,
wow. And it seems to me that this is not a topic I've heard much about until pretty recently. I'm not a mother, but I do listen to a lot of news. And there seems to be an effort to sort of center and elevate the not so happy, more realistic stories of pregnancy and childbirth and motherhood and physical mental health effects that go along with that. What do you think has created this shift?
You know, I think the last few years there has been, I think part of what has come out of the COVID pandemic timeframe is just an increased awareness of everyone's need for mental health supports. And I think it was a really challenging time for parents in particular. You know, when we look at numbers for perinatal mood disorders, so what might have historically been called like postpartum depression, we know that that's about 1 in 7 mothers and actually 1 in 10 fathers, which is another population that doesn't get mentioned a lot in this conversation. But I will tell you, Shelley, just, you know, as someone working in this field, other folks, when we talk about the last few years, we all kind of feel that those numbers are probably much higher than that in the last couple of years. So I think there is just a real shift globally towards all mental health awareness, which is great.
Yeah. And what do you hope to achieve through these efforts to raise awareness through Bartlett, through the classes, the support groups, and now this Real Talk Run Walk.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that I have learned through the groups that Terry and I are doing together is one of the more challenging aspects of anybody dealing with loss, grief, trauma, depression, anxiety is how isolating it can be. Just feeling very alone in your experience. And so by meeting with other people in these support groups, that decreases that feeling of isolation, gives people a real sense of hope and connection. And one of the things that Terry has done a wonderful job of is put together a really lovely list of kind of talking points or ideas on ways that people can support, you know, others in their life that may be going through one of these kinds of issues. And she has those resources available for us at this event this weekend. So part of the idea is just to kind of generate some conversation so that people feel more comfortable in opening conversation, having some real talk around these subjects.
That's really great to hear. And I think it's a wonderful idea. Talking about the support group and the support groups and the education, the classes that the Bartlett Obstetrics Education Team offers. What are some of the ways that you are doing outreach to to all the mothers in Juneau or in the region to make sure that they know about these, know that they're free, know that they can attend? How are you making it more accessible besides coming mm-hmm. on Juneau afternoon?
Yeah. well, one of the things that's been really cool about these three groups in particular, the Lost group, the Real Talk group, and the Birth Reflections and Healing group, that all three of those are offered through Zoom. They're virtual platform, which means that we can offer those not only to our local population here, but to, you know, Juneau services, a large Southeast region in terms of birth. And even if folks didn't deliver with us, we're happy to, you know, have them participate and access these resources from their communities. If they have a telephone, they can call in on Zoom and meet with us for these sessions. And as far as, you know, groups and classes, we try to have a strong social media presence. We have really great partnerships with all of the clinics here in town that provide prenatal care and pediatric care. And honestly, some of the strongest referral sources that we have are those wonderful care providers.
That's great to hear. Is there room for more people to join the support groups, or are they pretty filled up?
Absolutely more room for people to join the support groups. We always welcome people. Once people have registered, they get a Zoom link, and that is a recurring Zoom link. So once they've gone through the registration process one time, they can attend any of those virtual monthly meetings on a recurring basis. And we send out, you know, email reminders so that they know, you know, I know how time passes and it sneaks up on you. So we send those out and say, hey, it's time for that monthly meeting again, come join us. And, you know, sometimes for these hard subjects, sometimes they sign up and then need a couple of times to think about it before it feels like the right time. It's scary to do something new and talk about hard things, but I think it really ends up feeling like a good step when people are able to join us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on today to talk about this and to talk about the Real Talk Run Walk, which is happening this weekend. Do you want to share some of the details about the event?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be this Saturday, the 22nd at 9:00 in the morning at the Airport Trail. We are hoping that folks will, you know, show up about 10, 15 minutes early to start that sign-in process. There's no registration needed ahead of time, but they will need to, you know, kind of sign in and get their bibs, the race bibs sorted out. There's a place where they can, you know, indicate if there's anyone in particular that they're running or walking in support of. And then we have several different events. There's a tot trot, an 80-yard tot trot that we're gonna start off with at about 9:15, followed by a half-mile youth run. And then we'll do our 5K and 1 mile walk-run events for adults. Following that, we've got 30 t-shirts for the first, we've got some t-shirts to give out for free. The first 30 kids and the first 30 adults will get a t-shirt, and we've got some warm beverages and snacks for kiddos and music, and it should be a very fun connection event.
That sounds lovely. And where can we go for more information about the run walk or anything else that you're doing?
Yeah, all of the groups and classes, as well as this event, can be found on bartletthospital.org, on our calendar or under, believe, Social Connections is the tab.
Thank you so much, Sarah Gress from Bartlett Regional Hospital. I really appreciate it, and thank you for doing what you do.
Shelley, thank you so much.
Good luck this Saturday.
Thank you.
Between you and your ambition, I am a poster girl with no poster. I am 32 flavors and then some, and I'm beyond your peripheral vision. So you might want to turn your head, cause someday you are gonna get hungry and eat most of the words you just said.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years with 7 cafes and drive-thru locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. I'm Shelley Delaney. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, and here with me is Christopher Cook to talk about the Juno Symphony concerts happening this weekend. Hello, Christopher.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, we got some special guests in here as well. We have Stephen Jones and Fabio Agustinis. Hello and welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for being here today. Looking forward to talking with all of you. Christopher, we'll start with you. Last week you were here to talk about the 60th anniversary gala. How did that go?
Oh, it was wonderful. We had a great time, and just about everybody dressed up in just fantastic 20s garb. It was wonderful. We had great music from Taylor Vidic and her band. It was fantastic. So, yay.
That's great. Good celebration then. Hope everybody had fun. And this weekend, you've got the first of the main stage concerts this season happening Saturday and Sunday, live and in person, JDHS, Ciudad Cafe Auditorium. Is everyone ready?
Yeah, we're so excited. I guess what we're sort of saying is this is basically our first normal, with air quotes, normal season in 4 years. And for one reason or another, you know, things have been complicated for the COVID and other things. So just getting back together and starting at the start and getting to the finish line, I mean, we're psyched. So super excited about the literature we're playing, and we're just really delighted to have Stephen and Fabio with us. And they are going to be playing some exciting music that Juno's never heard before.
For those who don't know, who makes up the Juno Symphony, especially now after four years of change?
You mean in terms of the staff or?
The musicians.
The musicians. Well, we have about 35 to 40 local residents who are our members of the orchestra, and many of them have played for many, many years. And we have some visiting musicians that come to us from California and Washington and from parts of Alaska as well that join us for concerts. And basically, we haven't been able to come all back together like this until very recently. I mean, our first full orchestra concert since the pandemic began was in last April. So this is, for us, you know, truly the beginning of a new season, and we're just thrilled to be here.
I hadn't realized that it was just last April.
Yeah.
Wow. The theme is stories. Can you tell me how you selected that and how the program supports the theme?
Yeah, I mean, this season, you know, as we talked about a little bit last week, we're celebrating 60 years of the Juno Symphony, and we wanted to find ways of thinking about and talking about music for each of our concerts. And so this first concert, Stories, is very much about the idea of the power of music to express a narrative, whether it be literally a story or something that just kind of makes sense in the listener's mind and comes together. And we've all had that experience with music of the way that we can be in one emotional state or mental state and then listen to music. And music causes us to react differently to ourselves and to the world. So this concert, and Steve and Fabio will talk a little more about the piece that they'll be performing in, Omni Phoenix, which is a jazz, it's essentially a jazz piece. And of course, jazz is a story that is created anew every time. It's improvisatory. It's literally the act of creation. On this concert, though, sort of the main, you know, the anchor piece is Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade, which is literally a set of stories from the 1001 Nights, the story of basically Princess Scheherazade, who was one of the wives of, really kind of a monstrous despot, the Sultan, who had a very nasty habit of taking a new wife each night and executing her in the morning
because
he was afraid that she would be unfaithful. And Scheherazade, through her own courage and intuition and really, really just brilliant strategy, basically the way the story goes is she kept telling him stories that he needed to hear the rest of. She left him on a cliffhanger. So for 1001 nights, he kept her alive to hear the story it completed. And then at the end of the process, she had changed him, and he basically abolished the policy that he had, which was, of course, quite monstrous. And actually, you know, in the way of fairy tales, everything ended up happily ever after. But what Scheherazade is really about is the true, tremendous courage of a single person changing an act of evil into something that was better for everybody.
That is fascinating. Thank you for that. That backstory there, I think that really deepens the experience for everyone who hears that piece if they don't already know it. And I know you're excited to present some world-class guest artists that are here with us today. So we have Stephen Jones and Fabio Agustinus. Hello and welcome. Would you please introduce yourselves? We'll start with Stephen.
My name is Stephen Jones. I'm a saxophonist and also a jazz educator. I'm the director of jazz studies at Texas Tech University. Christopher and I have worked several times in the past, and we're colleagues in the past at another university. And so I'm excited to be here and working with Christopher again.
Welcome to Juno. Fabio Agustinus, would you please introduce yourself?
Sure. Hello, my name is Fabio Agustinus, and I'm a drum set player, percussion player as well. I also teach at Texas Tech University out of Lubbock, Texas. And I'm excited to be here.
Welcome to Juno as well. How did you get joined up with the Juno Symphony?
Well, I got through the connection with Steve and Christopher, and I got that invitation through them. So I'm really honored and excited to be here.
And for each of you, what is your role in the performances this weekend? Fabio, let's start with you.
Okay, yeah. So this piece was conceived for symphony orchestra plus tenor saxophone and drum set, and I'll let Steve talk a little bit more about the commission that was written for Michael Brecker initially. So the drum set is also like a soloist instrument in these pieces. So it's basically a combination of orchestral music with kind of a jazz approach. You know, so that's kind of basically the one of the roles of the drum set. It's just to kind of, like you were discussing early on, it's kind of glue things together, glue the jazz side and the orchestral side of things together. Yeah,
that sounds really interesting. I can't really like imagine it in my head, so I guess I'll just have to come and listen.
You have to come and listen, yeah.
And Stephen, what about yourself? What's your role or roles in the concerts this weekend?
My role is primarily improvisatory. There have been forays in the past of composers who have tried to blend the jazz idiom with the orchestral ensemble, and with varying degrees of success. But a lot of them, you know, without mentioning any particular pieces or composers, a lot of them end up being what I call not really jazz pieces, but just jazzy, meaning they maybe have a few idioms included in them that are in terms of inflection or, you know, small phrases, or sometimes we call them riffs or licks that sound like they come from the jazz idiom. But, you know, the soloist part is still completely composed and under the control of the composer, whereas this particular piece, most of the melodic material that the saxophone has is improvised in the moment. So there are a few basic figures that are sort of skeletons or motivic ideas that are written out on the actual saxophone part when you look at it. But it even says, play this or something similar. And it gives you some harmonic information about what's going on in the orchestra. And in the jazz world, we call that chord changes. So it gives you harmonic information about what the orchestra is doing at that particular moment in terms of chord structure and tonality. So you have an idea of what kinds of things that you play are going to work and what are not. And that's one of the things that we're pretty adept at in the jazz world, is just being aware of the overall harmonic structure of what's going on in terms of chords and harmony, and being able to improvise within that framework, but having a tremendous amount of freedom at the same time. So when you look at the music, there's not a lot of you know, little black dots on there, like you look at a lot of other music that has a lot of little black dots with notes and on a staff and stems and beams and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of bars that are just empty. There's nothing there. And all it has is a chord symbol, which gives you an idea of what is going on harmonically, and then a general description about what the composer is looking for you to do, what kind of texture they want, is it active or is it something a little bit more floating and esoteric, and some dynamic considerations, but there's a lot of freedom, and pretty much the soloist is responsible for improvising all the material in the moment.
Well, that's a pretty serious job. It takes a lot of creativity, I imagine, and experience. Christopher, what do guest artists add to these symphony performances? How do they change the dynamics?
Oh, it's one of my favorite parts. I mean, it's when you bring... Music is a shared activity. It's a communal activity. And not only does it bring new ideas and new voices and new experiences into the mix, but it's also reinvigorating for everybody. It's reinvigorating for those of us making the music and for those listening, because basically when you bring different musicians together, you get different music. It's that simple. And I always like to say that jazz is one of the very greatest American contributions, truly American contributions, not just to music, but to the world. It's an extraordinary act of creation that our culture created jazz. And jazz is just as important as any other kind of music. And increasingly, the composers of today aren't afraid to bring in all kinds of different elements and voices. So jazz is an extraordinarily complex and a challenging thing to do. When you hear somebody playing jazz, I mean, that's thousands and thousands of hours of work that they've and time that they've spent learning how to seem like they're making it up on the spot. And the other side of it is this piece and these guys I have right here. I mean, this is going to rock the house. This is it's super fun music. And one of my favorite things about this piece in particular is it gives our orchestra members a chance to get a feeling in performing music that as orchestral musicians, they don't often get a chance to have. So one of my favorite more recent compositions, and I think if you even remotely like jazz or rock music or film scores or anything else, you will absolutely love this piece. And these guys are just, they're going to tear it up.
Well, it was lovely to meet you both, Fabio and Stephen. Thank you for coming today. Christopher, thank you for bringing your friends to the interview. Two concerts, Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 3 p.m., JDHS, Yada Akahle Auditorium, tickets and seating chart and all that available at junosymphony.org. Fabio, anything else to add or share before we say goodbye today? Anything you're looking forward to?
I think that was pretty much it. I'm really looking forward to the concerts. And as they were saying, you know, each concert's going to sound different, especially with that piece, because of the improvisatory character of both instruments we play. So I'd just like to invite you to go to both of them if you can, because they're going to sound different somehow, you know.
Definitely. Anything else that anybody would like to add?
No, we just, you know, as Fabio was saying, you know, we'll see you at the symphony, as they used to say here in Juneau. We have performances on Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 3 o'clock.
Sounds great. We will see you there live and in person. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tune in October 20th on Revision Alaska, KTOO's new documentary film series, Episode 4, Caught in the Undertow, Chapter 2.
This is the longest I've ever been sober in my life, and it's great. I'm getting to know me.
Finding adequate behavioral health services is a challenge in Alaska. This episode spotlights Alaska's addiction crisis. Watch live on KTOO 360 TV, Thursday nights at 8 or stream anytime.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. And for the first time since the pandemic, more than 50 downtown businesses again welcome trick-or-treaters to the neighborhood on Halloween. The event was first organized by Kindred Post in 2014. And here with me today are Kendra and Nami. Hello.
Hi.
In unison. Yeah. Nicely done. All right.
We practiced. Work together.
Tell me how you first got the downtown business trick-or-treat tradition started.
Boy, way back in the day, I was taking my son trick-or-treating downtown, and it was nobody had candy. It was really sad. We like went to different businesses. For some reason, I thought it might be a thing, and you know, I think he was like 8 at the time or 7, and I was like, gosh, it just seems like a missed opportunity, you know, for all of us who are many of which have family members, you know, and have kids. And it just seemed like something that downtown would be interested in, but just hadn't been organized yet. So then I just, you know, hit the ground. I'm a community organizer by training, not a business owner. So I just canvassed, you know, I went downtown, I knocked on doors and said, hi, can I talk to you about trick-or-treating? And a lot of the businesses at the time, I think, were like, yeah, sure, we can do that. And just kind of thought we'd put a sign up and move on, and, you know, and that I would just promote it, da-da-da-da. And then I was at Costco that night because my team was like, we are out of candy, can you get more? And I, like, raced to Costco. And I ran into, like, 5 or 6 other downtown business owners that evening who were also at Costco trying to get more candy. So it was very successful. We saw that, you know, if we opened the doors, the community came by to knock on them.
Oh, that's fantastic. What a great story. So it sounds like it's a pretty popular event, and I bet you've seen some great costumes over the years. Do you have any that stick out in your mind?
Yeah.
We were just talking about costumes in the break room.
We were. As I was like, it's so cute, Kendra. This is Kendra's first time doing it. And I was telling her, it's one of my favorite events we organize of the year because the kids come in and they're astronauts and they're cowboys and cowgirls and superheroes and dogs are hot dogs and babies are lions. And it's a hoot, you know? And it's... And it's a low maintenance event for us, you know. People just come in and they've got one thing they do, and that's say trick or treat. Then you give them candy, and it's 100% satisfaction. It's like it's just joyful all around, and I love it.
I would imagine the costumes are a lot of fun. Mm. Have you heard from folks over the last few years that they've missed this event and wanted it back?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like everything in the pandemic, right? Like, there's just been so much loss, I think, amongst us around public engagement and around community events like this, and for good reason. You know, we didn't organize it, you know, in the name of community. It's not that we don't like joy or we don't like candy or treats, but we like the health of our neighbors. And so, you know, it was worth the pause, but absolutely everybody's kind of chomping at the bit to try to get back out there and do things together. And we're really excited that we feel that it's safe enough to be able to organize it.
Yeah, that is great news. So what do Kindred Post and other businesses have planned for, and how can folks participate?
Well, Kindred Post will be facilitating it all, so we'll be putting together balloons and everything for all the businesses to grab in the morning. We will have candy ourselves, and then a lot of businesses will have candy. I've heard from a couple businesses that they're doing something else. So Red Dog told me just the other day that they're going to try to put this fishing game together where kids can, like, fish cool. for skeletal fish or something like that, which sounds really exciting. I think Imagination Station is going to have some little toys to hand out. So there will be a variety of things happening, and I'm sure there will be more than I even know, which will be very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a very lively scene. And so, yeah, from what I understand, you look for the businesses that have orange balloons on the storefront, right? And that's how you know you can go in and trick-or-treat there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely. Everything cool. is walkable. So find a place to park. And even the lots are two-hour parking often, and the event is 2 to 6. So, and they stop, I think, checking at 4 o'clock. So there should be plenty of parking opportunities for those who aren't familiar with downtown. And then everywhere is free from 4 to 6 p.m. So feel free to find a spot. And then every place in the area that's participating is totally walkable.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that. I know some people are scared of parking
downtown. Yeah, you can find a place to park on the street and you've got it for 2 hours, so
yeah,
it's no problem.
And you don't even have to walk uphill. Mm-hmm. So is there, and this is Monday, October 31st. I don't know if we mentioned that or not. It is
yes.
Halloween. What are you both going to wear?
I'm going to be a pinata. Last year, I bought a pinata costume, and it's just, like, so fun. It's got, like, the dangly stuff on it, and so you can just, like, shake. It's a really fun costume, so.
I hope nobody, like, comes at you with
yeah,
a
I hope
a
so,
stick.
Too. I didn't even think of that.
I was going to say.
I'm sorry that I brought that
that's
up.
That's okay.
I was going to say more that it's fitting for you since you're so full of sweetness.
Oh,
yes,
that's
of
so
course.
Kind.
That's a much better take. Thank you, Nami. What about you? What's your costume
going
to be?
I'm actually going to be out of the country on Halloween. And so sadly, I'm not going to be here for this particular one. So I'm looking forward to just seeing everybody else's pictures and living vicariously through everyone else's costumes.
I hope there's lots of pictures and lots on social media. So again, mm-hmm. this is Trick or Treating with the Downtown Businesses, Monday, October 31st, Halloween, from 2 to 6 p.m. Thank you, Kindred Post, for spearheading all of this and putting it all together and making it so easy and fun for everybody. And thanks for being here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, Shelley.
Happy early Halloween.
Yay.
Happy Halloween.
Sounds wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On a sunny spring morning, the snow has finally melted from an Alaska muskeg, and the spongy green meadow is warming in the sunlight. Insects are beginning to buzz and flit, and an insect predator is here, silently hunting. Although this is a life and death drama playing out on the surface of this soggy meadow, it's subtle. The hunter is a sundew, the only carnivorous plant in Alaska. There are about 50 carnivorous plants in the world, and there are two species in Alaska, the roundleaf and the narrowleaf sundews. They're found throughout the state in poorly drained areas like fens, wet meadows, and muskegs, where plants have adapted to nutrient-poor soil or developed ways to supplement their nutritional needs. Alaskans hiking through such areas have likely stepped on or over these little sundews. A close look at the moss and vegetation underfoot can reveal the low-growing, palm-sized plant with fingernail-sized leaves. Each leaf is covered with tiny hairs, glands, actually, each secreting a shiny, sweet droplet of goo that attracts and traps gnats and mosquitoes. Once stuck to the gluey leaf, the insect's body is absorbed into the plant. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today. On tomorrow's show, we'll have a live episode of Culture Rich Conversations hosted by Christina Michelle. Juno Afternoon is currently broadcasting live Wednesday through Friday at 3 o'clock on 104.3 KTOO Juno and 91.7 KAUK Juno Auk Bay, also online at ktoo.org. And the show repeats at 7 p.m. right here on this public radio station. Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Clinkett and Haida Social Enterprises. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is produced by the KTOO Arts and Culture team with help from Boston Christopher and Aaron Tripp. To listen to individual interviews, see links to anything we discussed, or to be on the show yourself, check out our website at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. And until tomorrow, have a great Juno evening. Yeah.